I'm Christopher Lydon with the writer Thomas Frank. He's the best-selling Omnicritic who founded and edited The Baffler magazine for years. He's a columnist at Salon.com, and he wrote the book on the turning of American politics 10 years ago. It was called What's the Matter with Kansas? Tom Frank, you've done it all again, in my view, in this Baffler piece you wrote last winter on the Academy fight song. The question that has puzzled us in this program is, how did higher education in general turn from the good old GI Bill days and the land-grant college days long before that, from being a sort of incubator of the great American middle class to being a trap for 17-year-old kids who are signing their lives away with student loans into eternity? It turned into a trap maybe for all of us. It may be the undoing of the great American middle class.
We begin with the times we're living in, I suppose. One of the phrases that I like to use is that we're living in a golden age of price discovery, where people in business are figuring out that all of these things that we once considered to be public goods are in fact, essentially can be turned into private property, and you can charge essentially whatever the traffic will bear. But there's many examples, medicine, where you look at some of the prices that are being charged for prescription drugs that people need to stay alive. They're absolutely outrageous. So look at something like electricity, where we deregulated electricity generation a couple years back. And now education is doing it as well. But education has something that it's comparable to electricity and to medicine, that they hold something, that they sell something that we believe to be so valuable that we will literally pay almost any price for it. And that thing that we think they're selling is entry to the middle class. They sell the credential. And this is something that we as a nation have brought on ourselves by the kind of worship that we indulge in towards the university. Look at how President Obama speaks about the university. It's worshipful. Look at how Tom Friedman speaks about the university, or David Brooks, or anyone. You choose an economist at random, and I guarantee you they've said something about how the university is the only thing that's going to save us as a nation or something like that. It's the only possible thing that can solve inequality. This is how we define social class today. Now, it wasn't always like this, okay? Because once upon a time, people rose through the ranks of American society through work, by, rising in their job. But today, everything comes back to education. The analogy I always like to use is those stupid stickers that they sell that you're supposed to put on the back window of your car. That is the boiled down essence of what your college education is. It's a credential that you get to flash.
A college student asked me the other day, would we pay that money if we could get everything but the credential?
No, we know the answer to that. You can find out what the syllabus is and read the books yourself.
And how much would you pay for it?
Well, nothing. Nobody does it.
Your analogy with medicine is fascinating. For one thing, who knows, for example, what you're paying for? What is the price of a new shoulder? What should it be? Secondly, in education and in medicine, the costs are hidden. In medicine, it's insurance, and in education, it's loans.
It's not just hidden. We deliberately confuse ourselves about it. You think about the way that we talk about college. The word that we use again and again and again is dreams. You always encounter this, your college dreams, okay? We deliberately, as consumers, think about college as the opposite of an economic transaction. We lull ourselves to sleep about it. And meanwhile, the university is becoming more and more and more predatory as the years have gone by.
Meaning?
That they are, that they're bottom liners, and they've become more and more so. Of course, they'll tell you they're charitable. They're technically on the books charitable, whatever the hell that means. Look, I come at this from, I got a PhD. I made the terrible mistake, sir, of getting a PhD some years ago back in the 1990s and trying to make a living. I wanted to be a professor. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to spend my life teaching American history. And I go out on the job market and I discover right away what everybody else in my generation who got PhDs discovers is that the universities have figured out not to give people tenure track jobs anymore. They keep you as adjunct workers. They figured out how to manage the labor force, just like any 19th century railroad baron would figure out how to manage the labor force. I was able to get, I earned $1,500 for an entire semester of work teaching American history. $1,500 And that's okay. That was some years ago now. But this kind of thing has gotten worse, not better. The adjunct professor situation. And I'm talking about the people, by the way, who are actually doing the teaching that you and I have convinced ourselves is so important. That's going to take us across the sea of social class. That education itself, the actual stuff of educating, is done by people who the university has managed to bid these people's wages down to almost nothing.
Noam Chomsky says our teaching at university level now is done by temps.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
No tenure, no benefits, no job security.
Yes.
Tom Frank, take us through the basic outline of what you call academic capitalism. You write that the first step is give one industry access to the dream. There's only one gateway, that's higher education. Then you marketize it, you figure out how it can be monetized. Then you propagandize it as the answer to all your prayers. And then, as you write, you send your 17-year-olds, as you would to Santa Claus at Macy's, into the admissions office with a blank check, which is to say their loan signature, and which will be paid sometimes for the rest of their lives. Walk us through the whole experience. How did it happen?
People have been calling for academic capitalism. That's not a term that I made up. This is a term that you find in the literature, and going back, as far as I know, at least 20 years, no, probably more, back to the 1980s. The idea being that universities were encouraged and even forced by state governments and other actors to become more market savvy, to become market-oriented players. And they had to do this by claiming their patents on pharmaceuticals and anything that's invented at the university. They had to start monetizing things like that. They had to start advertising more aggressively. They had to start obviously charging with the tuition, and they had to start managing their workforce more aggressively. I mean, you think about the university that you and I went to back in the day, and it's the exact opposite of a capitalist institution. You think about professors with tenure, sitting around in their lives and reading romantic poetry or something like that. It's a great, great, great life.
And writing books from time to time.
That's right. But now you think about the things that universities do now. I mean, there's a new scandal all the time, usually involving sports, big tobacco, or big pharma. They've invented some medicine and they're figuring out how to monetize it. And they all have these hedge funds attached. I mean, I like to say now about Harvard, which I understand is in your listening radius somewhere.
Somewhere. $37 billion in their endowment. Manage that.
It's a hedge fund with a college attached to it. That's what it is.
And they're still charging people for tuition.
Of course, that goes with it. But you look at this institution of the university and also the ever-expanding ranks of administrators. They pay their presidents now sometimes over $1 million a year. You've got these, it's like an army of administrators who run the place now. The administrators who basically were just a tiny number of people when you and I went to college. It's now become a professional occupation. By the way, those people are paid very well.
Instead, I don't understand how this happened or what interest they serve other than expanding the worker base of the institution. Why do we need those administrators? What are they doing, actually?
Benjamin Ginsberg, I believe he's a professor at Johns Hopkins, wrote a fantastic book about the rise of administrators and at the same time, the fall of the faculty, the fall of the people who actually do the educating. I mean, they're just contract employees now, or as Noam Chomsky said, they're temps. But the administrators are essentially, they've got the tenure now. They're in there for life. It's a secure job. It's got all these great benefits, very well paid. They get to live in a nice, leafy college town, and they don't know anything about any of the traditional academic subjects. While all of these things are happening, and we're encouraging universities to become more market-minded, two things are happening. State governments are reducing how much they give to state universities, okay?
This again has to be explained. How did the states get out of the university business, which was everything?
I have to fall back on the broader political changes that have happened to America. I originally come from the state of Kansas. Kansas used to be very proud of its education system. The University of Kansas is a damn good school, or was a long time ago, and they just slowly defunded it. And I mean, the writing is on the wall now. They've cut taxes so dramatically in Kansas that there's just going to be no way that they can fund it to the degree that it's always been funded. So the University of Kansas just has to go out, and this is every state university, has to go out and find other means to prop itself up. And those means are, of course, I mean, I don't know what it's going to be in the case of KU, but it's going to be the same as every other state U. Basically, it's going to become expensive. They're going to have to find other ways to pay for things. And okay, so while all this is happening, you have this other development at the same time, which is that the federal government is not interested in looking into this anymore. And the example I always like to go back to is that in the late 80s and the early 1990s, there was, you know, tuition was increasing then too. This has been going on for quite a while. And this was the first time that journalists really got angry about it. It was in the late 80s and early 90s. And you started seeing op-eds around the country and even exposés about the high cost of tuition, what the hell was going on at these places. I forget which newspaper, I believe it was the Wall Street Journal, uncovered that the Ivy League colleges would meet every year to set tuition and student loans, financial aid, and professor salaries. It was unbelievable. And the U.S. Justice Department actually sued them for this. It was an antitrust case. This was when George Bush Sr. was president, mind you, a Republican, okay, used antitrust against the Ivy League schools, called them a collegiate cartel, went after them. Now, long story short, they were able to get the Ivy League colleges to agree not to meet anymore, but it didn't solve the problem. It didn't stop them from the massive annual tuition hikes that goes on to this day. They just don't do it in lockstep anymore. They do it without without benefit of meetings. But there's still all kinds of shenanigans that goes on. If you ask me, there's all kinds of different ways that government could step in and go after these people. And not just government, accreditation agencies. There's all kinds of people that have power over colleges, but they decline to use it.
Thomas Frank, how would you change things? How would you save what's good, eliminate the nonsense? What's the way out? What's the cure?
The cure, the first thing is for some state to start funding their university properly, make tuition free or close to free, and make it excellent. It's not a pipe dream. It's not something crazy. It's something that existed, you know, up until fairly recently. Once you do that, once you apply, you know, competition, let's say NYU is charging students $60,000 a year. It's going to look pretty funny when they're trying to get you to pay that when it's free to go to, I don't know, the University of Wisconsin or something like that, which gives you a better education, you know.
Again, thank you, Noam Chomsky, but he reminds us that Mexico, a poor country, has free higher education. Finland has free higher education. Germany has free higher education.
Argentina has it. Israel has it.
You also speak in The Baffler, Tom, about eliminating the money drains, meaning?
Fire the presidents. You know, these people drawing down $1 million a year, get rid of the football teams. I went to the University of Chicago for graduate school. They got rid of the football team back in the 1930s. It was too much of a distraction. Today, it's too much of a money drain. A president making $1 million a year, there's absolutely no need for that. At a charitable institution, the idea is ludicrous. Just thin out the administration. Have the accreditation agencies come down like a ton of bricks on any university that uses more than 20% of their teaching with adjuncts. You know, that's an outrage. You make students pay $60,000 a year and then you teach them with adjuncts? That's not right. And it's not fair to anybody involved, not to the students, not to the people that have gone out and got the PhDs and are working as adjuncts. And it's not fair to the tenured professors either.
Thomas Frank, if you make college free, of course, you eliminate the loan and the debt problem. But what would you do about $1 trillion in debt burdens hanging on the people who are supposed to regenerate our economy, our country, our civic life? And they can't, as we know, they can't get out of it. They can go bankrupt and they can't get rid of their student loans.
Treat it like any other loan. Treat it like a home mortgage. Make it so that the interest payments are deductible on your income tax. Why the hell not? I think at some point we're just as a nation going to have some kind of loan amnesty. Look what we've done in this country. We charge all this money so that the university president can have a nice McMansion, and so that the people in the football team can have a beautiful stadium to play in, and all this kind of crap, and they can build these fantastic new buildings on campus, which somehow we got along with just fine 20 years ago without those buildings, but the effect of all this has been to saddle an entire generation with an enormous amount of debt. And when they go out into the world, they've already got the kind of debt burden that you and I have because we own a house, but we're adults. They signed those papers when they were 18 years old, for God's sakes.
Tom, that's your wish list about how to get out of it. Where are we going? Where is this juggernaut going?
But where it's actually going, it's actually just going to get worse. I mean, look, President Obama, who's the one guy who really could do something about this, the only thing he suggested is that he'll shovel out the student loans even more. Okay, I think what the direction that we're headed as a nation is towards setting up more private for-profit universities, constantly trying to solve the problem by using market forces to do it. And it won't work, but that's the only way we understand, you know, that's the only way we know how to do things, it seems, anymore. Things are only going to get worse. I don't see any force that can change the status of adjuncts, for example. I don't see anybody that's rising up to challenge university administrations. And state governments, if anything, are becoming ever more desperate to cut taxes even more, you know, and cut funding to universities even more.
I hesitate to mention it, but when you get to my age, even halfway to your age, you realize, of course, that the value of the education is cumulative, it's lifelong, it's abstract, it's literary, it's imaginative. How would we redefine the route to grown-up happiness as something other than this marketized gateway? I mean, challenge the fundamental premise that this is the only way to happiness, to the full life.
What you just described, that was a very moving description of what sort of classical liberal arts education used to offer people. When President Obama, Tom Friedman, and so on talk about education, that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about essentially vocational training. They want you to major in engineering or math. To get what you just described, you don't even need to go to college. You just need to go on a course of reading. What college does is it enhances the experience by making it a collective generational thing. And also you have the instructors who are, you know, as you and I know, we both had wonderful college educations and the instruction is such an enormous part of it. But maybe, you know, a handful of liberal arts professors can get together and offer this on a small scale on their own without an administration, without a football team. You know, there's all sorts of ways that we can still achieve that. Think about the other question of the credential. We didn't always look to universities for that. People rose up through work. You know, they got a job and they rose up through the ranks at the company they worked for, or they joined a union. Yeah. These were all different ways of joining the middle class. There wasn't just this one way, you know. But those other things seem to just be off the table now. It just seems absurd to pay $60,000 a year so that you can read Rousseau. I mean, I can read Rousseau here. Hell, I can hire somebody to read it to me, teach me French, and then, you know, read it to me in French for that kind of money. It's nuts.
Tom Frank, this is fascinating. All your work is fascinating, but I think your piece in the Winter Baffler on the Academy fight song tops all.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm always happy to talk about this stuff.
We'll do it again.
Absolutely.